Today, as we close out this season of Epiphany, we also, in beginning the season of Lent on Wednesday, with Ash Wednesday, today we celebrate the transfiguration of the Lord. And Matthew's Gospel, chapter 17, verses 1 through 9, describes that event for us. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. This transfiguration is amazing. It's one of those great high moments of the Bible, certainly one of the great high moments of the New Testament. It's a moment that brings in Old Testament with New Testament, the Hebrew Bible with the formation of the Christian church, with Moses and Elijah appearing there, obviously signifying the fact that this was a continuation of all that God had promised to God's people and to all of the world as well. And so it's a great and high moment. And then the transfiguration itself and the fact that Jesus' face shone with the brightness of the sun, which we see again in the book of Revelation when John is there on the island of Patmos and he has the vision of Christ being there. And he says his face was shining with the full brightness of the sun. And so we see that continuation as well. It's an amazing moment. It's one that really causes us to reflect on the glory of God and the presence of Christ. But there was another transformation, another transfiguration that took place. And that was in the lives of these three disciples because they were overcome with fear. They didn't fully understand what was happening. They reacted in very human fashion, the way that we would react if something like this happened. They ended up just on the ground, trembling, filled with fear. And Christ came to them and touched them and changed them. That transforming touch transfigured their lives, transfigured who they were, transfigured them at that moment so that they could continue to be the disciples, the apostles, those who were sent into the world to accomplish great and glorious things. That transforming touch transfigured their lives. Perhaps in some ways that was as significant or perhaps even more significant than the fact that Christ shone with all the glory, the purity, the holiness of God, and Moses, Elijah being with him. That transforming touch was so significant. It says so much about us, about where we are, about who we are. That transfiguring touch, that transforming touch, that touch of Christ exemplified to them, showed them that Christ understood exactly where they were right at that moment. On the ground, trembling in fear, that Christ understood exactly where they were and that Christ came to them at that moment, not saying, you don't get it. I'm God. I'm fully God. I'm here. And so now you're on the ground trembling in fear and looking down at the dirt. Why are you doing that? Instead, Christ came to them because he understood exactly where they were, understood exactly what they were encountering in that moment. And Christ was saying, I'm here, and my touch assures you that I am right here with you at this time. Years ago, I had a gentleman in my church who suffered a stroke, and it basically debilitated his right side. And I, of course, went out to visit with him, especially after he got home, and his wife was sort of perplexed. They had no children. They didn't have family in the area. They lived in the area a long time. And she was perplexed, and she said, you know, the therapist said that he needs to walk. And she said, but he can't use his arm, and he can't really use his leg. And she said, I can't really walk him. And the therapist said, you know, just hold on to his belt and let him hold on to you and just walk him. And these, I guess, was before the days of home health and everything. And so she said, I can't do it. And the therapist said, he really needs to walk every day, several times around the house and everything. And so I said, well, you know, I'll stop by. I'll stop by in the afternoons and I'll walk him. His name is Wallace. I said, I'll walk Wallace around the house twice a day. And I said, I probably won't do it on the weekends, but I'll do it every day of the week. And she said, yeah, that's fine. The therapist said 4 or 5 times a week would be fine. And so then I started walking with him. The thing I realized was that Wallace was a hard worker all his life. He'd been a welder welding on these skyscrapers in different places as they were building them. He was used to traveling all over the nation with his welding team, and they would do these gigantic buildings, and he was always going here, there, and yonder, and he provided very well for his wife, and he was used to always being able to tackle anything that was out there. Anything, any obstacle, he could tackle it, he could do it. He was tough as nails, but now he was pretty much paralyzed on this side of his body, and I could tell in his eyes he didn't know what to do. He was having to rely on someone else to help him through this. That was not Wallace. That's not what Wallace did with his whole life. He was filled with fear, but it was also just like an abandonment of everything that he had been his entire life. And he was baffled by it. But I was able to go with him, and I would grab him by the belt, and he would grab his arm around my shoulder, and we would walk around the house. He was more like hopping. We would walk around his yard, and he would hop along, and he was able to share with me stories of his life, and I was able to share my strength with him. He never really got any better before he finally died, but he was there, and we were doing what he needed to have done, and in some way, I think it helped him to understand that God was with him. God understood right where he was, that his whole life had been turned upside down. Everything that he prided himself about, the way in which he encountered and conquered the world, all of that had been taken away from him. But God said, I'm right here with you, even at this moment. That transforming touch. Also, the transforming touch teaches us in an interesting way that Christ knows exactly what we have been doing. That's not a phrase that we like to think about too many times. Christ knows exactly what we've been doing. Here in this passage, the disciples that are there say, we'll build booths, we'll build tents, we'll build dwelling places for you and Moses and Elijah up on this mountain. We read that and we go, huh? Why would you do that? You know, I guess they thought it was so holy, so spectacular, they would just live there on the mountaintop and be there and everything would be fine. And so we'll build 3 dwelling places for you. And it's interesting that that's just totally ignored and God speaks at that moment because it was totally out of whack. It wasn't at all what God would have done, what Christ would have done, what Moses and Elijah were there for. It was totally out of whack with that. God knows exactly what we have been doing. God understands that sometimes we look at the world, we look at our faith, we look at our spirituality, and we get it a little bit out of whack. And we think, what was I thinking? Why did I do that? Why did I let anger get the best of me? Or why did I get despair to get the best of me? Why did I let my fear get the best of me? But Christ understands exactly what we have been doing. And at that moment, Christ offers his transforming touch. Christ also knows exactly where we'll be going. He understood that they had to leave the mountaintop and go back down. And he understood what would take place. He said, "Don't tell anyone about this until I'm resurrected from the dead." Can you imagine hearing those words? What? What did he say? What does he mean? He's going to die and he's going to be resurrected? I mean, how could they even comprehend that? But through that, Christ was saying, "I understand exactly where you will be going as well." And Christ offers his transforming touch to us at that moment as well, that he understands exactly where we'll be going and that Christ is there. Several years ago, I read an article about a man in Japan, and he had made a small foundation to help with a situation that he realized was happening. And there was a place overlooking the Sea of Japan called the Tojiba Cliffs. And this man had discovered that people would come there to jump off the cliffs to die, to commit suicide. And so he started his own one-man crusade, and he would be there at the cliffs. And when he saw someone walking out on the cliffs, he would go to them, and he would start talking to them, and he would start sharing with them, you know, life and everything else. And he was a Christian himself, and so he would start sharing with them about that. And he would offer them food that they normally used for their New Year celebration, something that families had together, something, a comfort food. He would offer them this special blend of rices that he knew they would recognize, and he would talk them off the cliffs. And at that point, which was several years ago, he had saved over 188 people who had walked to the cliffs to jump off, and he had been there for them. Christ knows exactly where we are going, and Christ says, no matter where you're going, I will be there. I will be there. And you will find my transforming touch even at that moment. On Wednesday, we begin the season of Lent. The season of Lent has always been a season of spiritual preparation, of spiritual awareness, of spiritual examination as well, examining our discipleship. I think that as we begin this time, perhaps we need to add something to our spiritual discipleship, our spiritual journey, and that is, perhaps we need to ask ourselves, where does Christ need to apply Christ's transforming touch to my life? What part of my life needs to be transformed? What part of my life that I might hold dear, that I might just say, this is just me, this is who I am, but that we know is not perhaps in keeping with Christian discipleship? What part of our life needs Christ's transforming touch upon us as we live out our season of Lent? I pray indeed that each and every one of us will examine that this next week and during the season of Lent and look for Christ's transforming touch upon that part of our life that perhaps we hold as that which cannot be touched. Let us have a word of prayer together. Most gracious.